too late. Swinging around the chattering machine pistol, Kinnison peppered the Chancellor on the throne, tearing out gouts of wood from the arms of the chair, throwing off Griffin's aim. His blaster barked twice, hitting nothing. Then Kinnison rode the bucking rapid fire into a tighter grouping and tore Griffin apart, blowing away his fingers, shattering an elbow, breaking his knees, and removing his manhood in a barrage of hot lead. The 9mm rounds stitched a zigzagging path across his body, the spent brass arching through the air to land tinkling on the floor. Bleeding from a dozen locations, the mutilated man tried to rise, but instead he fell to the stone floor, twitching and choking, drowning in his own blood. Putting a burst into the ceiling to capture everyone's attention, Baron Kinnison slapped in his last clip and walked boldly into the room, covering the crowd with his smoking weapon. Many of the Sekhmen had weapons out, but none dared to fire. Unsure if the Baron was alone, or if squads of soldiers were en route to the throne room to back his play. Exactly what Kinnison had been counting on, their fear of betrayal. Like the thief, frantic with worry that others would rob his stolen treasure, the traitors expected treachery from others.
I'm the Baron of this ville, and if I don't rule here, then nobody does. Surrender, or the island will be destroyed.
Can't chill us all with only one blaster.
Don't need to. In a few minutes, every firebird on this island will launch, streak high into the sky, and then curve back to blow this mansion and the ville below to pieces. The powder mills, the armory, all have been targeted. Maturo Island will burn, and nothing can stop them but my word.
Incredibly, the fat man then tossed the blaster aside and casually walked across the room to sit in the throne.
Swear an oath of loyalty and obedience to me, or die. Your choice.
You're bluffing.
Suddenly, there was a roar as a firebird launched from overhead.
That was from the roof.
The first of hundreds.
Kinnison felt the tension heighten. Their fear was the only tool he had to regain the throne. This trick either worked or he died. It was that simple. All or nothing. Victory or death. Holstering his piece, a young corporal went to one knee.
We are yours to command, Lord Baron.
Kinnison spent precious moments studying the Sekhmen. He had to be a new recruit, as the face was unknown. Clean-shaven and bald, the Sekhmen moved with the grace of a jungle cat, only small scars marking his face. His gun belt was woven canvas, not the usual black leather, and the handles of his hand cannons were heavily carved. Some sort of a tattoo peeked out from under his sleeve, and a gold earring hung from a lobe. A former sailor. How interesting.
What's your name?
The Baron fought off a stomach spasm as he said this. His need for more jolt was making itself known again.
Rochar Langford, my lord.
Kinnison was impressed. The man didn't seem to be afraid. Amazing, and potentially useful. The Baron grandly gestured.
Your oath is accepted. Rise, Chancellor Rochar Langford.
Chancellor?
Langford gasped, then collected himself and gave a salute.
Sir, yes, sir.
Realizing the untenable position of indecision, the rest of the people in attendance also knelt and swore to obey the Baron. The pledges of fidelity were strong and well delivered. But Kinnison coldly remembered when they had given the exact same oath many years ago, before the revolt. His grandfather used to say that promises were like pie crusts, made to be broken. One of the Sekhmen glanced at the ceiling as if he could see the missiles streaking through the air.
My lord, what about the firebirds?
They have been neutralized.
There was a long dramatic pause, and the Baron feared he had timed the blast wrong, when a powerful explosion sounded from outside. Surreptitiously, the Sekhmen exchanged glances, wondering how the hell the fat man could control the firebirds without speaking directly to them. Settling into his throne, Kinnison was pleased to see the fear of his unknown abilities fill their faces. Excellent. It would be quite a while before he was challenged again.
Chancellor!
Directing some servants to drag away the body of Griffin, Langford turned.
My lord?
Send a squad of Sekhmen to collect the escaped prisoners and chain them in the powder mill. We will need their cells. Soon enough, the dungeon will be packed with traitors waiting for execution.
The crowd of barons and officers didn't take that news well, and several began to quietly slip out of the throne room. Langford watched the door close behind the officers.
I'll handle it personally, sir. Sergeant, take a squad and follow those men. Don't let them leave the island without my direct authorization.
Yes, sir.
The sec man saluted, and Kinnison smiled at Langford. Competent help at last.
Good man. Then release the carrier falcons to our PTs and sailing ships. They are to stop hunting pirates and muties to concentrate on locating the outlander Ryan and his group. I want a wreck of every vehicle within a 5-day sail.
Sir.
And increase the reward to weapons, powder, and slaves.
It will be done.
A lieutenant cleared his throat.
My lord, Griffin ordered their immediate... I'll have the troops try to capture them alive.
Baron Kinnison frowned.
No. Kill them all on sight. Except for the two women. Break their arms to keep them from escaping, and bring them to Maturo Island.
Yes, my lord.
As the guard raced away with the orders, Kinnison smiled to himself. Yes, the outlander sluts were perfect. Under torture, they might tell many important things. And if they knew nothing useful, well, he needed new wives to start trying again for a son. Maybe several this time. Fresh meat should do the job nicely. That was, for as long as they lived.
Try it again!
Ryan put his weight behind the tree branch and shoved the end deeper into the mud under the stuck tire. Getting ready, the rest of the companions put their shoulders to the mired bus and dug in their boots.
Third time's the charm.
Here we go!
Christy started the engine, blue exhaust pouring from the tailpipes. Then, pumping the gas pedal, the woman shifted gears and stomped on the clutch, rocking the long wag back and forth. The companions pushed as the back tires began to spin freely in the slick mud, sending out a spray of muck until smoke rose from the hot rubber. The wag started to inch forward. Then Ryan cried out as the tree branch broke from his grip and sailed off into the nearby trees.
Kill the engine!
Ryan spat, flexing his stinging hands.
Save the juice.
As the engine dieseled off, the wag promptly settled into the mud once more. Fire blast. After all they had been through to be stopped by something like this. Christy had carefully avoided the roads and cut across barren fields, pausing only to let Ryan set fire to the savannah to hide their trail. Going miles out of the way, JB blew up a bridge and tried to make it seem they had crossed to the other side first. Then they drove off with tree branches tied to the bumper to erase the tire marks. Jack took a turn behind the wheel, driving the wag down the bed of a shallow river so the water would wash away any marks, then started into the mountains and drove back out over the wag's tracks to lay a fake trail. Reaching the grasslands, the companions were confident of not being followed. Then they encountered the mud. Dean rubbed his shoulder where it had been pressed against the wag.
Maybe we should empty the bus, you know, make it lighter.
Wouldn't help. Not when we're already this deep.
Ace in mud.
Jack scowled in annoyance, sliding off his jacket to toss it through the open back door of the wag. His shirt was sleeveless, and the hard, rippling muscles in his pale arms were clearly defined, as were countless scars.
This is more like quicksand than mud.
A rose by any other name.
Doc brushed some speckles off the frills of his shirt. He was getting filthy, and thought that he'd have to ask Emily to soak it as soon as he got back, to keep the material from permanently staining.
Hey, any block and tackle in the wag? Maybe we can hitch the axle to a tree and pull the bus free.
Sounds good. Go check.
Ryan tried to shove the branch deeper under the left tire.
Everybody else get some more branches. We need to chalk every tire firmly.
Can't hurt.
Straightening his fedora, JB swung the Uzi to his front and stood guard while the others trundled out of the soggy ground and headed into the trees for fresh supplies of wood. Slogging around the bus, Dean climbed inside and scraped the soles of his boots clean on the metal step before going to the rear of the wag and rummaging through the stacks of boxes. He found a tremendous amount of smoked food, but little in the way of tools. Could they have missed a stash back at the lagoon?
Any luck?
Nothing yet!
Removing a wicker basket of blankets, the boy uncovered a long, narrow crate. Unlike the other containers, this one was tied securely shut. Using his bowie knife, Dean cut the ropes holding it closed and flipped over the hinged top.
Hot pipe!
He lifted a fat tube into view.
Firebirds!
Let me see.
JB opened the rear door. Stepping over some boxes, Dean passed him a tube, and the armorer studied the weapon. Just a simple bamboo tube, lacquered with tree resin until it was fireproof, with car